I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep us stuck. Smashing the Plateau is part of the Best Network, dedicated to supporting individual entrepreneurs who are experts in their field, but may not be an expert at running a business. Best Network is ideal if you are an expertise-driven solopreneur business owner with many years of experience in your field. If you're a consultant, coach, or professional selling your knowledge and creativity, we're here for you. If you join the Best Network, you'll receive access to the full Smashing the Plateau archive of over 350 episodes, and you'll receive expert individual and team mentorship, peer support, and curated educational content that reinforces and expands our goal of the show, helping you get your business the recurring revenue it deserves. With teams of like-minded and supportive professionals surrounding you, you'll be perfectly poised to smash the plateau in your business with our membership programs. To learn more about joining the Best Network and how to smash your plateau, go to smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork. That's smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Paul Spiegelman. Paul is the co-founder of the Small Giants Community, a peer group of purpose-driven business leaders. He's the former chief culture officer of Stericycle, the co-founder and former CEO of Beryl Health, and the founder and chairman of the Beryl Institute. Paul is a sought-after speaker and author on leadership, employee engagement, entrepreneurship, culture, and leading a purpose-driven life. Paul, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Good to be with you, David.
Paul, how difficult was it for you to get your first business to the point where it produced consistent, stable revenue?
Oh boy, it took a long time. And then I realized that getting a recurring revenue business or developing a structure where you could gain recurring revenue was really critical to any business I became involved in. My first business I started back in 85 with my two brothers, and we actually were in the medical alert business, similar to what you've seen in those commercials, I fall and I can't get up, even though that wasn't us. We started in a 8x10 room as a monitoring center for people with medical conditions and the elderly, where we could provide help in case of emergency. So like many people, I'm sure, that listen to this, we started in a bootstrapped way. We had a cot that we rolled in, and one of us had to sleep overnight waiting for calls to come in. And the recurring revenue idea was similar to what we do with our homes, where we hook our homes up to an alarm system and pay a monthly fee. Our thought was we could do the same thing in the medical alert business and provide services to people who would pay a monthly fee for that sense of security. And that was really the first time we developed a recurring revenue model in our business. What became our core business was really a call center business where we took calls for hospitals throughout the United States from consumers who were calling looking for referrals to physicians, or moms calling to sign their kids up for Lamaze classes or themselves up if they were having a baby. Basically a healthcare concierge for acute care hospitals. And the recurring revenue model there was to charge per call, or in our case, to charge per minute for the calls that we were getting. And what we realized was that many of these hospitals would get calls every month, regardless of the method or the money that they spent on advertising. And if they got 1,000 calls a month, it seemed like every month they would get 1,000 or 1,100 or 900, something like that. And so we really focused on what we considered to be an essential service that our customer needed that could be charged in a recurring revenue way. And that really opened up a lot of doors for us in terms of allowing us to fund our own growth going forward.
And why did you start that particular kind of business?
Well, like many find, what we do is we listen to our customers. And in those early days when we had the medical alert business, it was we were driving around to people's homes, and we would go to local hospitals in Los Angeles, and I would try to get them to sign up for our program. And a lot of work and a lot of effort. We actually made this product that we put in people's homes. And one of our clients asked us one day if we could take some phone calls for their hospital. And I'd never heard of this service called a physician referral service. And then come to find out every hospital in the country did it, and many did it in-house. And we found a way to provide that service on an outsourced basis. So we ultimately sold our original medical alert business back in 1994, and then really focused on this call center business, and maintained and grew that business until I sold it in 2012. But it was really that one, being building a recurring revenue model that helped us grow. The other is that we had a philosophy that was, I think, different from many businesses, is that we decided in what would be a commodity business, a call center business, where everybody competes on price. And you think of the boiler room operation and the low morale, low margin business, that we were going to charge our customers based on value. And while the revenue was recurring, we were going to charge a premium for what we did. And that allowed us to fund our own growth. And in the early days, when we tried to get money from outside investors, nobody would give it to us. And in the later years, with some success, people were throwing money at us. But we managed to grow the business without any outside capital up until the time that we sold.
Yeah. How did it feel to charge customers based on value? And what I think I'm hearing from you is that you were charging more than others because of the value.
Yeah. And the question is, what is the value, and how do you determine the value? How do you articulate it and in a way that your customer appreciates it? So, and I'd say every business is commoditized at some point or another, whether it's early on or not. And so you have to continue to be able to articulate that, what that message is. And so what we did is we realized that the value in our business was our people and the kind of culture that we built. And we were going to create a workplace that was not like a typical call center. We wanted to create a place to work where people loved getting up every morning and going to work. And we employed lots of single moms and people who were making $29,000, $30,000 a year. And we realized that if we could show them that we cared about them, show them that we were going to be grateful for the work that they were doing, show them that we were going to help them learn and grow, and that there was a purpose that they were there beyond the job, that they would fall on a sword in hard times. And we could translate that employee loyalty into customer loyalty. And if our customers were loyal, then that would turn into profitable business for us that we could reinvest back in our people. And it's a term we call the circle of growth. And as leaders, we always have choices about how we focus our time, how we prioritize our efforts. So we made that decision pretty early on that we were going to focus on a philosophy of employee engagement, and that was going to drive our business. And once our customers understood that in representing their hospitals to the consumer, we were creating this environment that we were going to do that special job for them, then they were willing to pay more for that. And ultimately, what we said is that we weren't selling what we did. We sold who we are. And that allowed us to charge 30 to 40% more than our competitors.
Paul, how did you know that investing your resources in creating an environment of engaged employees would result in customers being willing to pay a premium of 30 or 40% or whatever the additional markup was?
Yeah, it's a great question, David, because a lot of people will say, especially in this day and age, okay, yeah, we've heard about these culture philosophies and people building wonderful internal cultures and employee engagement, but what's the ROI? How can you really measure the results of that? And it was clear to us that we needed to measure the results of that. And the message that I came away with was, it's not only the right thing to do, it's good for business. In business, we all want to make more money. We want to be successful. We want to grow. And I found that the best way to grow our own business was to focus internally, focus on our people, and let the rest fall from there. Let the people be the leading indicator of decision-making rather than our financials. So as we measured those things, we came up with a number of metrics. Of course, you could look at your own employee engagement and see if that increased as you measured that either formally or informally. But then how does that translate to the business side of it? So one is that we saw as our employee engagement went up, our customer loyalty went up. We also saw that we were able to not only charge more, but our profitability was much higher than our competitors. From a operational standpoint, our attrition rate was really very low. In a call center business, you're looking at 80 to 120% attrition on an annual basis. Ours was 12%. So people sometimes don't realize the cost of attrition, the cost to not only get rid of people, but find new people, retrain them, rehire them. It's incredibly expensive. So we would measure the impact of that, and we're able to see that as well. And ultimately, when it came around to looking at the business overall and how we were valued in the community, we were able to create a value for our business much in excess of what you would see for other call center businesses at the time when I exited the business in 2012.
And Paul, I know that later on you co-founded the Small Giants community. Was there a relationship between what you did early on in your career and why you founded the Small Giants community?
Well, sure. Like I'm sure many of your listeners, we realize pretty early on that we don't know everything or we don't know much about anything as entrepreneurs, and we just jump in. And then we start to read books, and then we start to build relationships with mentors and coaches and people that can teach us and realize how much more we can learn from them. And I went a number of years before I kind of branched out and realized that there was so much knowledge out there. And so one of the books that I read back in 2007 was a book called Small Giants, Companies That Choose to Be Great Instead of Big, written by Bo Burlingham, who had been at that time a 30-year editor for Inc. magazine. And as I told you, my focus really has been culture and employee engagement. And I really became an evangelist for that method of business and so passionate about it that I wrote my first book back in 2007, around the same time. And I just finished the manuscript for my book. I read Small Giants and I said, aha, that is me. That's what I aspire to be. I want to be a small giant. And Bo described these companies who had great respect for a multi-stakeholder approach in business, that yes, we all want to grow, but we want to grow with purpose and values. We want to build great cultures. We want to be involved in our community. We want to make the world a better place. And so I was so inspired by his work that when I wrote this, my first book, I wrote a blind email to Bo and I said, you don't know me, but I was really touched by your work. Would you consider writing a foreword for my book? And he actually said yes. And couple months later, I get this beautiful foreword for my first book, and Bo and I became friends. And I told him over time that there were so many other companies that would resonate with this message about building a business with purpose. And I said, I'm not much of a networker. In fact, I'm not really very outgoing myself. I'm kind of reserved. And so when I find people that I have things in common with in business, those are the kind of people I want to hang out with. And so I said to Bo, why don't we start a community of these leaders, people who want to learn and grow from others that think about business the way we do. And so that's why we started the Small Giants community. It was to really identify, connect, and then develop values-driven business leaders. And lots of business leaders in the world, but not everybody wants to lead their company with values and purpose. And that's okay. That's the choice we make. And we want to hang out with people that feel like we do about business.
And what has the result been, Paul? What has Small Giants community turned into?
Well, it's really been something that's very special. And over the last number of years, we've grown it into an organization that is really pretty special in terms of the kind of people that it attracts, because we all have this filter of wanting to build our business a certain way. So in a sense, it's kind of a peer group of values-driven leaders. We have lots of content that people can avail themselves of. Ultimately, what we do is we take people on what we call the journey, which is a multi-year effort to become certified as a small giant leader. Because while we're leading our businesses in certain ways, what's the chance that that is going to sustain over time? And to act like a small giant, it's something that needs to be institutionalized in our businesses. So we just teach people how to do that. We have a wonderful annual conference actually coming up in May in Detroit called the Small Giant Summit. The challenges of building an organization like this is that, unlike other businesses, we can't just buy a list of people that might be interested in our program. You have to dig deeper and build relationships with people to really find out that they resonate with this message. But the good news is that there's a number of organizations that are focus now on this method of doing business. And I'm in it not for the money. I'm in it for to just spread the word about leadership and the choices that we have to make. Because the old way of leading, this command and control style of directive leadership that used to be very successful for many, many years, is really kind of dying out in favor of this idea that leadership is about collaboration and teamwork, especially if we want to hire millennials who want to make the world a better place and who are focused on how they're treated, not just about the money. Then I think we're working towards a point where this kind of leadership, this kind of culture in our businesses is not the exception to the rule, but it is the standard way of doing business.
Yeah, I can certainly tell you, this may just be anecdotal evidence, but certainly among the kinds of people that have been guests on my show, which is now approaching the 400 mark, there are many people whose message and whose values resonates very much with what you've just described, that they're interested in collaboration and teamwork and making the world a better place through the kind of business that they pursue.
It's great to hear. Yeah. And congratulations on 400 guests. That's very, I'm envious.
Thank you. Well, it takes persistence. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen overnight. I also wondered, Paul, for those that might be intrigued by what Small Giants is doing, what are the qualifications for somebody to apply?
Yeah, interesting that the typical Small Giant member is someone who could be a solopreneur or a small to medium-sized business. And I would say the typical leader that's involved is in a business that's under 20 million, many under 10 million, some as high as 100 million. But really the biggest qualification is to be connected to the message that we describe, this idea of values, purpose-driven business, and the wanting to lead your business that way, and then wanting to learn how to do it. Because the comment that we get most often is, I get it, I resonate with this message, but I don't know how to do it. Or maybe I hadn't led my company that way before. So tell me very practically how to do it. And that's what the community is about, to provide those tips and strategies for tactically how to act like this and behave like this and teach others to behave like this. And we just want to learn from others. So if you come to our annual conference or you sit in our programs, our webinars, they're not going to be from famous entrepreneurs. They're going to be from people just like you and me who have built their business. Maybe we don't make the news, but we're making a difference. And those are the kind of people that tend to be attracted to the community.
Paul, particularly for solopreneur experts, those people that may have been in their field for, let's say, 20 years or more, who produce really high quality work for the people they serve, yet they, and whose values resonate very much with what you've just described, yet they struggle with the actual business part of what they do. They were trained in their specialty, in their subject matter, or their creative field. For the most part, these people are not necessarily trained in business. They've learned what they can sort of on the fly. Are there some maybe quick tips you can offer that you have seen in your work that might help them move the needle forward a little bit with regard to building some consistent, stable revenue and maintaining the kind of culture you described?
Yeah, and I think it's a great point, David. There's a lot of solopreneurs who do incredible work, but some of these concepts are foreign, and maybe they don't even have employees, or they might have an assistant or just be doing things on their own. As I said earlier, I think the risk is that in this day and age, virtually every product or service, even as a solopreneur, is going to become commoditized. And everybody that is competing against you can say at least that they do what you do. They can say at least that they have the same level of quality or better quality than you. Whether they deliver on that is not the point. But in terms of marketing and promoting what they do, there's people that are going to say that they can do what you do. And the only way to generate recurring revenue or to generate a premium pricing strategy is to find a way to differentiate. And whether you're any size company or a solopreneur, to me, the best way to do that is to build your brand. And that might be to build your brand as a business or to build your brand as an individual. And sometimes those are really one and the same. So I think that the first step there is to really understand the story that you're telling, that you can articulate to your clients, your potential clients, about who you are, and really defining that in a way that truly differentiates you. And that, and many have gone through this process of visioning, you know, your purpose, your values, where you are looking to be able to tell that story. And if you haven't, that's the first thing that I would do. And I don't care if you're one person, a one person business, that's what people want to focus on. I just spoke to a friend of mine who's been a lawyer for many, many years. And although he's part of a large firm, they realize that they are at the point where they need to find who they are and to translate that into a message for their customers so they can remain relevant and be able to continue to have that recurring revenue. So this is so important for a business at whatever point you're in. And many I find, like you described, David, that have been around for a long time, have never really gone through that exercise and have just sort of lived on the virtues of the good service that they provide. And that's great, but generally doesn't last forever. And I think the other opportunity, especially today, is for people to become thought leaders in those areas. And I think about my businesses and how we started, and certainly there was nothing sexy about being in the call center business, but we tacked on to this whole message in healthcare of the patient experience, which has really become a big topic to improve the patient experience in healthcare. We actually started a separate organization called the Beryl Institute, which today is one of the primary thought leaders in the whole area of healthcare and has its own recurring revenue model that came out of that. But by creating a thought leadership strategy in my core business around culture, we were able to write articles. I started doing speaking. I did a lot of things that promoted my passion for this message of culture. And I can point to multiple customers that had millions of dollars in recurring revenue for our business simply because I wrote a book or I wrote an article or there was a message, what I call elevating the conversation beyond the product or service that we provided. And so I think that's the opportunity for your listeners, if some of this is kind of foreign to them, is to sit back and reflect and to say, look, what makes me special? What is an area I'm passionate about? How can I turn that into a platform? And just start with the basics, whether it's blogging or speaking or a podcast like you've done. And once you get out there and start doing that, it's amazing what it can do to help you grow your business, to differentiate, to create recurring revenue, and to ultimately charge a premium price.
Right. Because I think one of the things to think about, especially for solopreneur business owners, is that every individual is in fact special. And so what you're describing is trying to unearth that specialness, articulate it, create a story around it, and start to create thought leadership based on the core values and purpose that are part of your own unique story.
That's right. And we all have a story. And I do a podcast as well, not nearly as much experience as you have, but that's what I focus on. Is I don't even focus much on the business that people are in. I focus on them. You know, what made you who you are today? Tell me about your childhood and your parents and the background. I mean, we all just have an incredible story, especially those that have had the fortitude to be in business and stick it out for this many years. You got to tell that story. I mean, look, we all want to do business with people we like. And so even if you're a solopreneur, how do you create that relationship? It's really by telling that story.
Very well said. Well, Paul, whom do you know personally who's done a really remarkable job at smashing the plateau?
Well, I'm fortunate through the Small Giants community to know a lot of people who have done that. And I think it's by people who have really stayed true to this values-driven leadership. And one person I think of when you ask that question is a gentleman by the name of Tom Walter from Tasty Catering in Chicago, who has had many businesses over the years and yet reached a point a number of years ago where he realized that he wasn't the type of leader that he needed to be. He was one of these command and control leaders that we were talking about earlier, until the point where his kids approached him one day and they were going to fire him from his own business and said, you know what, if you don't change, we're going to leave. And he realized that the way he had been leading all these years was simply the wrong way. And the only way for him to succeed and his family to succeed in this business was to change. And that's exactly what he did. And he took it upon himself to learn other methods of leading and engaging his people. And now he's a thought leader in his own right in the areas of culture and leadership. And so I think Tom is a great example of someone who realized that there was an opportunity to do things a different way. And so I use that as an example for your listeners to self-reflect and say, is there something I can be doing differently? And do I have the courage to make those changes?
What a great example. Thanks for sharing that. Paul, what can we look forward to in the near future from you? What's coming up?
Well, at this point in my career, David, I just like to evangelize and spread the word and talk to people who feel the same about values-driven leadership. Growing the small giants community is also important to me. I've had the good fortune of being able to do my work not only in small businesses, but once I sold my primary company, I sold it to a large public company and got to act as chief culture officer for 5 years as in a company with 25,000 employees. And now I've just jumped into a project that was one of my early dreams, which was to own a restaurant. And so a lot of people would say that's crazy, but it's something I've always wanted to do. And now I get to be in a different environment with people that are committed workers, but not full-time and have four jobs to just get by and to see how do we create that same sort of culture and environment in the hospitality industry and see if that's a new challenge that I'm enjoying very much. So just out there trying to spread the word as much as possible and would love for anybody that's listening to kind of join this evolution in business.
It sounds great. So how can listeners learn more about you and follow you?
Well, I have a website, paulspiegelman.com, and I'd be pleased for them to go to Small Giants, which is smallgiants.org, to learn about the community overall.
Sounds great. Well, Paul, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Paul Spiegelman, the founder of the Small Giants community. Thank you again, Paul, for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks, David.
I'm David Schreiner Khan. Thank you so much for listening to Smashing the Plateau, part of the Best Network, dedicated to supporting individual entrepreneurs who are experts in their field, but may not be an expert at running a business. If you're a solopreneur who's an expert in your field, but not necessarily smashing your plateau in business, and you want to ramp your recurring revenue, join our Best Network. Receive expert individual and team mentorship, peer support, and curated educational content that reinforces and expands on our goal of the show, helping you get your business the recurring revenue it deserves. To learn more about joining the Best Network, go to smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork. That's smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork. Join us and smash your plateau.